Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's too early to get to work in the garden, but it is time to think about your trees and shrubs. Today, we'll get advice on spring pruning. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day, and we are rich in tree experts today. Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, will be here, along with DNR forester Mark Vitosh. They will guide us through spring pruning and troubleshoot your tree questions. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here to cover the rest of the plants in your life. And you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it may be a little too early, maybe a little too muddy to get out and work in the garden, but it is time to think about your trees and shrubs. And we are rich in tree experts today. Jeff Iles is professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. Hello, Jeff. Oh, Jeff is there. There he is somewhere. Oh.
I'll say it again. It's good to be with you. And let me just say this. Thanks for letting me be on the Mark Vitosh show. I always enjoy that.
Oh, man, you're already starting. Can you guys ever get along? Mark Vitosh, DNR forester, is also here with us today. So as I mentioned, plenty of tree advice to be had. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is also in the studio with me to help me referee this conversation. Good morning, Richard.
I'll try my best.
All right. And we're going to start off the hour by talking about spring pruning. And Jeff, I'll let you get us started. So what are the things we should be thinking about right now?
Right. Well, I know, Charity, you talked about winter damage, cold damage last time. But that is part of the pruning story. So we've come through a pretty tough winter, and we're not out of the woods yet, so to speak. And so one of the things I'm going to be looking for in my yard is what died, what parts of my trees and shrubs are dead, and of course pruning will be needed to tidy those up. And so this time of the year, our thoughts turn to fixing damage from cold weather, maybe from rabbits. Who knows what happened out there in the landscape during the winter? But fixing those problems. Yeah, this time of the year is good. And I like to prune in March and April, with the exception of oak. We'll get to that later on. But I like to prune this time of the year before the leaves form because I can see the plant's architecture. I can tell what's living and what isn't much more clearly. And so this really is prime pruning season for most of the things that are in our yard.
Right. Well, and we did talk about it last week. We talked about winter damage. But when you say you can tell what's living and dead, give us a little guidance. Not everybody can tell quite so easily.
It's really not all that difficult. Obviously, if you grab a twig and it snaps off in your hand, that's a pretty good indication the plant is there, that portion of the plant is dead. But the brittleness or the suppleness of the twig, you can scrape away the bark sometimes and look underneath. And if it's still green, that's good. If you can find buds that are viable, that also is another indicator. But many times the dead tissue will have a slightly different color, and it's hard to describe that on air like this. But it's pretty apparent. Of course, the fallback is to wait until plants begin to leaf out and grow, and then just trim off the dead parts. Then it's much easier then.
Right.
I'm looking for any excuse to get outside in the yard this time of the year.
Absolutely, and. When things do leaf out, you're not going to hurt the tree or the shrub by cutting off something that's already dead.
Oh, no. But woody plants are tougher than we give them credit for, so no. Better to prune and err on the side of pruning than not.
All right. Speaking of pruning and erring on the side of pruning, some of us can get a little cut happy in the spring. We have this excuse to get out and start pruning. Is there a danger of over-pruning?
Well, you could do that. Of course, you never want to remove a lot of tissue that the plant is going to use to form leaves. And, of course, there are lots of stored foods in that tissue. So over-pruning is not good. I look for things like we just talked about, to remove dead tissue, remove branches and stems that are crossing or rubbing or might cause damage to the plant. So I'm looking for the plant's architecture. I'm not going to try to shape it into a ball, but I'm going to work with what the plant wants to do naturally and maybe do some thinning. Lilac's an example of a plant that sometimes gets overcrowded, and so I might do some thinning this time of the year. But it's generally working with the plant and not fighting against its growth habit, but just simply helping it and eliminating branches that are dead, dying, or could cause me problems down the road.
All right. Mark, you have something to add?
Well, one thing folks need to remember is the food producer for the tree is its leaves and its branches. So we really, as Jeff said, we want to minimize on any living plant how much we take. So during any pruning, we probably want to make sure we don't take more than 10 to 15%. Or the thing to think about is many of us are thinking about mowing the lawn this summer, so we want to lift that tree to create that safe clearance and stuff. But the thing we really want folks to think about is if you are going to lift your tree, remember that if you have a branch at 5 feet, that branch is always going to be at 5 feet. So if you know you eventually want to clear up to 8 feet, that means the first 8 feet of branches on that tree are temporary branches that you will have to prune off. But Dr. Isles doesn't want you to go out tomorrow and prune up to 8 feet and take all that off. What we really would like you to do is, if you can leave those branches in general, those lower branches that you want to eventually take off, till they're at least about an inch in diameter, and there's some new general percents and stuff, but generally you want to get those branches off before they're 2 inches in diameter to minimize the wounding that you caused to that tree. So you may go out and look at your tree, and you've got a couple branches that are an inch, you can take those off. But if you have some higher up that are only a half inch, you want to leave those for a couple years, because those actually, that food gets to that part of the trunk and helps the good food distribution. So if you go out and you take off 30, 40% in 1 year, you're actually, it's going to be difficult for that tree to adjust to that. So you want to slowly lift that up. It may take you 5 to 10 years to get that 8 to 10 foot clearance that you want after you plant that tree. It may even take 15 years, but you want to do it slowly over time and not take 8 feet in one day.
All right.
Would you agree, Dr. Isles?
Well, Charity, I think Mr. Vitosh has done a wonderful and a masterful job of describing this very detailed process. And what he has done, in effect, is remind our listeners that this pruning gig is an annual trip to the plant, perhaps twice a year. So we can't prune in 2019 and then come back in 2025 and expect things to be hunky-dory. So yeah, this is an annual event. And when it's done that way, then you can do exactly what Mr. Vitosh has prescribed. So I agree with everything he said so far.
Wow, can we tape record that?
Right, we did. All right, so when you talk about looking at the architecture of the tree, Jeff, you're a tree architect. What
right.
about those of us who are not? What are we looking for? How do we decide what to cut?
Well, what you want to try to do is stand back and look at that plant and try to envision what it's going to do on that landscape site in the next 10, 15, 20, 50 years. So take the long view, and that's why Mark is saying those lower branches are important, but they're temporary. So what I like to do when I'm looking at a shade tree is try to envision where my first permanent scaffold branch is going to be. It's not going to be 5 feet off the ground. It's probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 feet off the ground. And so everything below that point is temporary. But you want to have some feel for the architecture, those major structural branches that will be there for the long run. And, of course, I'm always a big fan of developing a central leader, sometimes easier said than done. It depends on the species. There are some plants that will fight you that way, but I'm always trying to develop a central leader. And then get good branch spacing around that leader. Some plants will fight you. My dear wife loves this plant called a twisty locust. It's in our backyard. It's the bane of my existence. But it does provide me lots of pruning because it always dies back in the winter. But that's a plant, as an example, that just will never develop a central leader.
Do you have rules about pruning angry?
we agree on just about everything except that plant. So
All right. So when you go out and you make the cuts, any rules of thumb, words of wisdom, so that you make the cuts well and don't damage the plant?
Yeah. Well, you know, this time of the year, I was worried about the bark ripping as I'm making a pruning cut. So there's some great extension publications that will do a better job of describing this than I could do on air here this morning. But there's a classic three-cut technique that we use to remove the weight of the branch before we make our final cut. That's useful. And then, of course, hopefully the days of flush cut pruning are long gone, thanks to the very good work of Dr. Al Shigo, the late Al Shigo, reminded us that we take branches off of trees as they fall off in nature. Their branches never remove themselves naturally flush with the main stem, but they usually fall off outside of something called a collar. And so we want to simulate that process when we're taking a branch off. But I reference these extension pubs. And if anybody would like to call me later on or email me, I can let them know where these things are.
Right, and they're also very easy to find through an internet search.
Yes,
and available for everyone to use. Some people still want to treat that wound after they prune. What do you think?
Yeah, that's an ongoing source of controversy and also study. There are people that are working on wound dressings that will help the wound close quicker, although I don't know of any on the market today that are useful in that respect. So I'm still holding firm to the fact that if you perform pruning at the right time of the year, follow proper mechanics, then wound paints, wound dressings are of little value. I guess the only time that I might use it, and Mark can chime in here, is that if you just have to prune oak, if there's some some reason you have to prune an oak, then maybe a wound paint to keep the insects away from that fresh wound might be advised.
The thing we got to remember is trees do not heal like we do. Trees actually seal. The branch collar that Dr. Iles is talking about is actually where what they call wound wood or callus tissue starts to develop, and that seals across that wound that you make and then eventually seals that shut. The other thing that a tree does, it actually makes three other chemical barriers inside the tree to try to wall off potential of decay. So the tree has its own defense mechanism against decay. And what we're really doing with this target pruning is we're pruning it in a way that tree can use its own defense mechanism. And so if we do the flush cuts or leave stubs and stuff, we're breaking that system, and it's going to be more difficult for that tree. And the thing to think about is if you've ever seen a board or something, they have knots. Well, that's where a branch was. So when you cut off a branch, there's a scar that's left there, but the tree seals that over and trails that leaves, basically cuts that or covers that scar over and then seals it so that decay is reduced in the tree.
All right. So they're going to take better care of it than you possibly could in most cases. Mark, we've got 30 seconds. Do you have a tried and true tool that you turn to in pruning? A lot of us have a lot of dull pruners and saws and things like that hidden out in the shed.
Well, my recommendation, that we're talking a lot about young trees right now, and there should be no reason that you should use a chainsaw. You should use a handsaw or hand pruners, and we don't need to use a chainsaw for these small trees.
Even
that would
if it's
be my
fun.
Recommendation. What's that?
Even if it's fun?
Even if it's fun.
All right.
That would be my suggestion.
Okay. We'll try to be prudent out there. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We've been talking about spring pruning, and of course, you can ask any questions you have about spring pruning or any of the other issues with plants or trees in your life. With me today, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, Jeff Iles, Professor and Chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it may be a little too early, maybe a little too muddy to get out and work in the garden, but it is time to think about your trees and shrubs. And we are rich in tree experts today. Jeff Iles is Professor and Chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. Hello, Jeff. Oh, Jeff is there. There he is somewhere.
Yep.
I'll say it again. It's good to be with you. And let me just say this. Thanks for letting me be on the Mark Vitas show. I always enjoy that.
Oh, man, you're already starting. Can you guys ever get along? Mark Vitas, DNR Forester, is also here with us today. So, as I mentioned, plenty of tree advice to be had. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is also in the studio with me to help me referee this conversation. Good morning, Richard.
I'll try my best.
All right. And we're going to start off the hour by talking about spring pruning. And Jeff, I'll let you get us started. So what are the things we should be thinking about right now?
Right. Well, I know, Charity, you talked about winter damage, cold damage last time. But that is part of the pruning story. So we've come through a pretty tough winter, and we're not out of the woods yet, so to speak. And so one of the things I'm going to be looking for in my yard is what died, what parts of my trees and shrubs are dead, and of course, pruning will be needed to tidy those up. And so this time of the year, our thoughts turn to fixing damage from cold weather, maybe from rabbits. Who knows what happened out there in the landscape during the winter, but fixing those problems. Yeah, this time of the year is good. And I like to prune in March and April, with the exception of oak. We'll get to that later on. But I like to prune this time of the year before the leaves form because I can see the plant's architecture. I can tell what's living and what isn't much more clearly. And so this really is prime pruning season for most of the things that are in our yard.
Right. Well, and we did talk about it last week. We talked about winter damage. But when you say you can tell what's living and dead, give us a little guidance. Not everybody can tell quite so easily.
It's really not all that difficult. Obviously, if you grab a twig and it snaps off in your hand, that's a pretty good indication the plant is there, that portion of the plant is dead. But the brittleness or the suppleness of the twig, you can scrape away the bark sometimes and look underneath. And if it's still green, that's good. If you can find buds that are viable, that also is another indicator. But many times the dead tissue will have a slightly different color, and it's hard to describe that on air like this. But it's pretty apparent. Of course, the fallback is to wait until plants begin to leaf out and grow, and then just trim off the dead parts. Then it's much easier then.
Right.
I'm looking for any excuse to get outside in the yard this time of the year.
Absolutely, and. When things do leaf out, you're not going to hurt the tree or the shrub by cutting off something that's already dead.
Oh, no. But woody plants are tougher than we give them credit for, so no. Better to prune and err on the side of pruning than not.
All right. Speaking of pruning and erring on the side of pruning, some of us can get a little cut happy in the spring. We have this excuse to get out and start pruning. Is there a danger of over-pruning?
Well, you could do that. Of course, you never want to remove a lot of tissue that the plant is going to use to form leaves. And, of course, there are lots of stored foods in that tissue. So over-pruning is not good. I look for things like we just talked about, to remove dead tissue, remove branches and stems that are crossing or rubbing or might cause damage to the plant. So I'm looking for the plant's architecture. I'm not going to try to shape it into a ball, but I'm going to work with what the plant wants to do naturally and maybe do some thinning. Lilac's an example of a plant that sometimes gets overcrowded, and so I might do some thinning this time of the year. But it's generally working with the plant and not fighting against its growth habit, but just simply helping it and eliminating branches that are dead, dying, or could cause me problems down the road.
All right. Mark, you have something to add?
Well, one thing folks need to remember is the food producer for the tree is its leaves and its branches. So we really, as Jeff said, we want to minimize on any living plant how much we take. So during any pruning, we probably want to make sure we don't take more than 10 to 15%. Or the thing to think about is many of us are thinking about mowing the lawn this summer, so we want to lift that tree to create that safe clearance and stuff. But the thing we really want folks to think about is if you are going to lift your tree, remember that if you have a branch at 5 feet, that branch is always going to be at 5 feet. So if you know you eventually want to clear up to 8 feet, that means the first 8 feet of branches on that tree are temporary branches that you will have to prune off. But Dr. Iles doesn't want you to go out tomorrow and prune up to 8 feet and take all that off. What we really would like you to do is, if you can leave those branches in general, those lower branches that you want to eventually take off, till they're at least about an inch in diameter. And there's some new general percents and stuff, but generally, you want to get those branches off before they're 2 inches in diameter to minimize the wounding that you caused that tree. So you may go out and look at your tree, and you've got a couple branches that are an inch. You can take those off. But if you have some higher up that are only a half inch, you want to leave those for a couple years, because those actually, that food gets to that part of the trunk and helps the good food distribution. So if you go out and you take off 30-40% in 1 year, you're actually, it's going to be difficult for that tree to adjust to that. So you want to slowly lift that up. It may take you 5 to 10 years to get that 8 to 10 foot clearance that you want after you plant that tree. It may even take 15 years, but you want to do it slowly over time and not take 8 feet in one day.
All right.
Would you agree, Dr. Iles?
Well, Charity, I think Mr. Vitosh has done a wonderful and a masterful job of describing this very detailed process. And what he has done, in effect, is remind our listeners that this pruning gig is an annual trip to the plant, perhaps twice a year. So we can't prune in 2019 and then come back in 2025 and expect things to be hunky-dory. So yeah, this is an annual event. And when it's done that way, then you can do exactly what Mr. Vitosh has prescribed. So I agree with everything he said so far.
Wow, can we tape record that?
Right, we did. All right, so when you talk about looking at the architecture of the tree, Jeff, you're a tree architect. What about those of us who are not? What are we looking for? How do we decide what to cut?
Well, what you want to try to do is stand back and look at that plant and try to envision what it's going to do on that landscape site in the next 10, 15, 20, 50 years. So take the long view, and that's why Mark is saying those lower branches are important, but they're temporary. So what I like to do when I'm looking at a shade tree is try to envision where my first permanent scaffold branch is going to be. It's not going to be 5 feet off the ground. It's probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 feet off the ground. And so everything below that point is temporary. But you want to have some feel for the architecture, those major structural branches that will be there for the long run. And of course, I'm always a big fan of developing a central leader, sometimes easier said than done. It depends on the species. There are some plants that'll fight you that way, but I'm always trying to develop a central leader and then get good branch spacing around that leader. Some plants will fight you. My dear wife loves this plant called a twisty locust. It's in our backyard. It's the bane of my existence. But it does provide me lots of pruning because it always dies back in the winter. But that's a plant, as an example, that just will never develop a central leader.
Do you have rules about pruning angry?
Oh, no. We agree on just about everything except that plant. So.
All right. So when you go out and you make the cuts, any rules of thumb, words of wisdom, so that you make the cuts well and don't damage the plant?
Yeah. Well, you know, this time of the year, I was worried about the bark ripping as I'm making a pruning cut. So there's some great extension publications that will do a better job of describing this than I could do on air here this morning. But there's a classic three-cut technique that we use to remove the weight of the branch before we make our final cut. That's useful. And then, of course, hopefully the days of flush cut pruning are long gone, thanks to the very good work of Dr. Al Shigo, the late Al Shigo, reminded us that we take branches off of trees as they fall off in nature. Their branches never remove themselves naturally flush with the main stem, but they usually fall off outside of something called a collar. And so we want to simulate that process when we're taking a branch off. But I reference these extension pubs. And if anybody would like to call me later on or email me, I can let them know where these things are.
Right, and they're also very easy to find through an internet search.
Yes,
and available for everyone to use. Some people still want to treat that wound after they prune. What do you think?
Yeah, that's an ongoing source of controversy and also study. There are people that are working on wound dressings that will help the wound close quicker, although I don't know of any on the market today that are useful in that respect. So I'm still holding firm to the fact that if you perform pruning at the right time of the year, follow proper mechanics, then wound paints, wound dressings are of little value. I guess the only time that I might use it, and Mark can chime in here, is that if you just have to prune oak, if there's some some reason you have to prune an oak, then maybe a wound paint to keep the insects away from that fresh wound might be advised.
The thing we got to remember is trees do not heal. like we do. Trees actually seal. The branch collar that Dr. Iles is talking about is actually where what they call wound wood or callus tissue starts to develop, and that seals across that wound that you make and then eventually seals that shut. The other thing that a tree does, it actually makes three other chemical barriers inside the tree to try to wall off the potential of decay. So the tree has its own defense mechanism against decay. And what we're really doing with this target pruning is we're pruning it in a way that that tree can use its own defense mechanism. And so if we do the flush cuts or leave stubs and stuff, we're breaking that system, and it's going to be more difficult for that tree. And the thing to think about is if you've ever seen a board or something, they have knots. Well, that's where a branch was. So when you cut off a branch, there's a scar that's left there, but the tree seals that over and seals that leaves basically cuts that or covers that scar over and then seals it so that decay is reduced in the tree.
All right. So they're going to take better care of it than you possibly could in most cases. Mark, we've got 30 seconds. Do you have a tried and true tool that you turn to in pruning? A lot of us have a lot of dull pruners and saws and things like that hidden out in the shed.
Well, my recommendation, that we're talking a lot about young trees right now, and there should be no reason that you should use a chainsaw. You should use a handsaw or hand pruners, and we don't need to use a chainsaw for these small trees.
Even
that
if
would
it's
be my
fun.
Recommendation. What's that?
Even if it's fun?
Even if it's fun.
All right.
That would be my suggestion.
Okay. We'll try to be prudent out there. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We've been talking about spring pruning, and of course, you can ask any questions you have about spring pruning or any of the other issues with plants or trees in your life. With me today, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, Jeff Iles, Professor and Chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're talking about trees, but also about any of the other plants in your life as well. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Jeff Iles, Professor and Chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron, and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. And let's get back to the phones. Gary is up next in Iowa City. Hi, Gary. Gary, are you there? All right. We don't have Gary there. Let's try Robert in Webster City. Hi, Robert.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have some mature spirea that should have been pruned 4 or 5 years ago. This is going to be their year, and I'm wondering what is the best method?
What kind of flowers do they have, white or pink?
White.
Okay, and how tall do they stand?
7 to 8 feet.
Okay. Well, one option would be to cut them off near the ground, let's say 2 or 3 inches above the ground. They'll grow back very quickly. The other option is to be a little bit more selective and just reduce them a little bit, maybe 10 or 15% by size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard about the method from my successful neighboring gardeners that you need to trim all the way as close to the base as you can. And does that mean taking out the whole shoot, which would be quite long?
Well, you really don't have to prune them back to the ground, but you can. That is an option. It's hard to kill a spirea. They'll come back and grow very nicely. So you can cut them back to within like 2 or 3 inches. They'll come back. Now, they obviously won't bloom for a couple of years, but they'll come back very nicely.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call. And another rabbit question. Dave on the line in Armstrong. Hi, Dave. Lots of rabbit damage this winter. What's your question?
Well, I think it's already been answered. I'm afraid I know the answer, but we had so much snow up here this year. I had a total of, I think it was four apple trees and 6 crab apple trees that I had trunk guards on, and I had 4-foot-high chicken wire around all of them. Unfortunately, the snow got higher, deeper than 4 feet, and so the bark has been completely removed from the trunks and branches extending out basically from 3 to 4 feet above the ground, as high as an adult rabbit can reach on its hind legs. And are the trees history is my question. I guess, is there any point in even waiting to see if they do anything?
How big are they trunk-wise in diameter?
Well, the biggest probably has a trunk diameter of about 6 inches. It was a Zestar apple tree, and we planted that probably 5 years ago, and the rest are progressively smaller. Probably the smallest is about an inch in diameter.
Okay. Well, one option would be to simply remove them. The other option would be, and this is more of a long-term investment, is where they will sprout below the damage. And since the damage occurred several inches high, this will still be the same tree. And what you could do is cut it off just below where they've damaged the tree, allow maybe 3 or 4 shoots to grow near the upper portion of that stub, rub off anything else, and then maybe next spring select the best one and have that be the future trunk. You could do that. It might work. But if you're not patient, I would just start over.
Okay.
And that would be my general inclination.
Okay. I sort of thought that was going to be your answer. Because they just completely denuded everything.
Yeah.
All right, sorry.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. Let's do a few email questions here. This one's from Brent. I'm curious when an ideal time would be to uncover my raised strawberry beds. Do I need to look at nighttime temperatures, and what's a good indicator?
I would say probably mid-April. It's a little bit early yet. If you remove it too quickly and they bloom, a late frost or freeze will destroy those flowers. What you can do is check. When they start to produce new growth, that's the time to remove it. And the new growth, this year's new growth, will be whitish, definitely white, last year's growth green. So if you check and all the foliage is green, that's last year's foliage. They're still dormant. They're still fine. But if you see a lot of white, then it's time to remove the actual straw.
All right. And a second question from Brent. Can I prune my rose bushes down to the base right now, or should I only prune a third at a time? They're currently 4 to 5 feet tall and taking over the side of our house.
I would prune out just the dead. I would typically leave at least 6 to 8 inches above the ground. But I'm thinking after last winter that there may be extensive dieback, and so much of the plant may be dead.
All right, here's a question from Jeanette. We are cutting down our deceased ash tree on our property. Is the wood usable for anything other than wood chips?
You can use it as firewood. You can use it as wood chips. Or if there is a log there, a usable log, you could use that log. If you know, normally if you have a length of at least 8 feet and there's at least 12 inches in diameter, I mean, obviously, the bigger that is, if it's 18, 20 inches in diameter, that wood can be used for benches. It can be used for a lot of different things.
So some cities,
you could have it milled if you have a local mill. I mean, obviously, you would really want to be able to do that, but you can. There, you can actually go online with Iowa State. They have a list of mills across the state, or you can call your DNR district forester to see if there's a local mill where a person could take it. They could even kiln dry it for you if you want to process. But I know a number of cities now that have been actually bringing in portable sawmills, cutting up some of that material and looking to make benches and other things in their communities, trying to utilize that wood. So a lot of it depends on the length of the log and the quality of that wood. If it has a lot of knots and stems in it, you're not going to have good wood. But you can also, wood turners will use that material for making all kinds of different candlesticks and all kinds of different things. So yeah, they're definitely, you can utilize that material if you want to.
And have I shared my theory with you that I think this is going to be the golden age of chainsaw carving?
Yes.
Oh, and you still didn't bring that up.
Well, you can also do that. Sorry.
All right. She also wants to know, are the ash chips safe for the yard?
They, my opinion is, yeah. I mean, the thing is that the chips, a lot of times, and most chippers aren't going to get small enough. If that tree actually was infested with emerald ash borer, it's obviously in the neighborhood and stuff like that. The one thing I wouldn't do is take those chips and take them to Aunt Laura's up in Northwest Iowa or someplace
okay,
like that.
Don't you transport could have, them.
Yep. But if all you right. can use them locally, the thing you got to remember about chips is if you're using them for mulch around trees and stuff, you only want it a couple inches thick. You don't want it right up against the trunk, so you want to pull it away a little bit. Things, you know, the typical things we tend to talk about.
All right. And also another question, what kind of evergreens and or cedars will grow well in the Dubuque area, and are any varieties deer resistant?
Well, this year, even the Juniperus virginiana or Eastern Red Cedar got nipped some from deer when they were hungry, but that's probably one of our better windbreak trees up for Northeast Iowa or most of Iowa. That's the one that people call the ditch cedar that you see throughout. That's a really good windbreak tree. Another good windbreak tree is Norway spruce, and spruce in general, the deer don't tend to feed on that. The one spruce tree, see what he says here, that I would avoid is Colorado blue spruce because of some severe potential disease problems as they get established in the landscape. Another one.
Jeff, did you want to weigh in right then? Or?
Well, you know, my advice would be to visit the Dubuque Botanic Garden. It's a great place, and they've got a lot of conifers that are growing out there. And if you really want to know what's going to do well in the area, what a great resource the Botanic Garden in Dubuque is. And we could debate the relative merits of Colorado blue spruce. I'm still of the opinion that one open grown is an okay thing because you'll get a functional life of 30 to 40 years. But in a windbreak, no, it's a bad idea.
Just be ready to cut it down in 30 years and then call Dr. Jeff Files.
Just you know, what are your expectations?
Just saying.
It's like I still will plant birch, knowing full well that I might get 20, 25 years out of them. And then they look really good next to my fireplace, you know, when they're cut up in logs. So.
It's all relative.
Okay. I've got a question for Richard now. This one's from Ryan. He says, I'm constructing a new raised bed vegetable garden in my backyard this spring. The garden walls will be about 12 inches tall, and I hope to have around 8 to 10 inches of soil in the bed. My question is, what do I need to do with the grass that will be under the new garden? I've researched this online, and I'm getting conflicting information. What do you say, Richard?
I would remove it.
Okay.
Destroy it by some means, and then work up the upper maybe 3 or 4 inches, and then as you add that first part of the soil mix, work that into that soil.
All right. And would tilling it under, would that be sufficient?
That may not kill it. I'd be inclined to remove it.
Okay. Here's a question from Jules. We have a 35-year-old spruce, which was the grand show of our yard until the last 2 years. The north side of the tree has been slowly dying, which I assumed for many years it was passerby walkers watering their dogs as they crept up the bottom branches.
Big dog.
Right. So I researched the problem. We cut the lower branches to allow for more ventilation from the southerly flow of breezes on our street. I also started to spray Daconil every 3 weeks starting in June. It helped some last year. However, this past year, winter winds really blew off the needles, hence the needle cast diagnosis. So we know the tree will need removal at some point. Can you share some tips as to how we can extend the life of it for a few more years and some realistic expectations of options that we have? And it's not the dog's
fault,
right?
Charity, it also could be a shade issue. He didn't, the caller, the writer didn't really say how this tree is situated in the landscape. But the other problem with some of these conifers is they will shade each other out if they're too close together. So that's also an issue. But yes, it probably is one of several needle cast diseases that rear their ugly heads and eventually have their way with Colorado spruce. And so holding out an optimistic view is like, a candle in the wind. I'm not sure it's a great idea. You can remove branches as they die. I don't know. I mean, there really is nothing you can do. I'm not sure spraying Daconil at this point is going to prolong the life, the functional life of that tree. And being that large, I think you'd have to have it done professionally anyway.
And if they do have it done professionally, I mean, you're looking at a minimum of 2 sprays per spring. But one thing they could do if they really – sometimes people will have these trees that they really want to try to protect and do anything that they can. The first thing I would do is actually go online to the Plant Disease and Insect Clinic at Iowa State and look how to submit a sample and actually think about submitting a sample themselves to just to verify if it is a needle cast and what it is. And because if it's shade and just on one side, then they may just have a one side issue. Because usually with the needle cast, it's fairly uniform throughout the entire tree. It starts at the bottom, works its way up, starts on the inside of the tree and comes out to the tips. We've talked about that, you know, 100 times. And sometimes if it's, you know, less air and stuff on the north side, it'll be a little worse. But Jeff might be right. It could just be a shade issue. So I would get it diagnosed first, and then they can see, you know, where they're at as far as what, you know, all the options are.
All right. And one more quick follow-up question. If we have to remove it, can we plant another tree in the same place? It's a perfect spot for a tree, and they're wondering if you have replacement tree suggestions. So can they plant it in the same area?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what would you suggest?
We don't
have time for a prolonged debate.
Okay. Well,
another Colorado spruce.
So the easy answer is they need to evaluate the site that's left, look at their soil drainage, look at how much space they have, and then try to find a species that's going to fit their goals and their needs. And there's a lot of good information from Iowa State through the Horticulture Department. The DNR has some good sheets on tree selection. But there, you know, there are some other evergreens that they could, if an evergreen is a choice.
All right.
Look around and try not to duplicate what's done in everybody else's yard. I know that sounds snarky, but we sometimes plant way too many of the same thing. And so it might be a good idea to see what else is around and plant something different.
And don't forget that small 6-foot tree that they would plant is going to get big and really try to find a plant that's going to fit that available space.
Two words, bald cypress.
Okay.
I'm all good with you, brother.
All right. Well, that's a beautiful moment.
I love you.
We should end now, but we're not done. I've got a good question for you, Jeff. I know this is one of your favorite topics. So Eric is on the line in Davenport. Hi, Eric.
Hi, good morning. How's everybody?
Good. What's your question?
Good. Well, I have two small kids that have been bothering me to build a tree house in our backyard.
Mm.
The candidate tree is a pretty old silver maple, and I just wanted to know your thoughts on tree houses in general, and what are some of the best practices for attaching a tree house to a tree?
Yeah, we don't have much time left here, Eric, but the very first thing I would do, I like tree houses. It's great. I applaud you for doing this with your kids. What a great father-child bonding experience. But boy, you got to make sure the tree you're going to build in is structurally sound. And you set off an alarm bell in my head when you mentioned silver maple. Not that all silver maple are bad. You might have a great one, but I would enlist the help of a trained, certified arborist, somebody that could come out and give you a good feel, a good assessment of the structural integrity of that plant. The last thing you want to do is go to the time expense of building a treehouse in a tree that has some big time structural flaws. And so grab an arborist or two, have them evaluate that plant for structural integrity, stability, and then you can begin the process of installing this treehouse. I'm not a treehouse expert. There are best practices that are online for making sure that you build this thing without damaging the tree, because anytime you hammer a nail into a plant, you're in essence causing some damage. So you want to be as unobtrusive as you can as you're building this treehouse. But job one is to make sure the tree you've outlined, you've identified, is going to be safe for you and your kids.
All right, Mark, you have something to add?
No, I agree with everything you said.
All right. You looked like you wanted to say, build a freestanding structure near the tree.
I was going to say tree tower, or just standing towers are kind of cool, too. Yeah. So
Like a firehouse. Or
like a fort, yeah.
All right. Well, we are out of time, but thank you all so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, DNR forester Mark Vitosh, and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. We will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. And also a reminder, our quiet membership drive is going on right now. And if you give today, your name will be entered into a drawing to win a $500 gift card from Earl May. So a great head start on your summer garden. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.